Blog Talk Radio.
It is May 11th, 2017. Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show. I am PWTorch.com's Mike McMahon alongside PWTorch.com's and PWPodcast.com's Andrew Socek. Andrew, how are you tonight?
Mike, I'm doing pretty well, though I feel pretty bad for the maintenance lady in the front row. She looks pretty upset tonight.
Yeah, I noticed that too. We're going to run down this show. This episode of Impact Wrestling, and you can give us a call and give us your thoughts at 515-605-9345. I saw about 99% of the show. There was maybe one segment that I missed. I was not watching the show live, which is why my Impact Report is not live on PWTorch.com yet. It will be a little later on tonight. But thanks to the magic of the internet and smartphones, I was able to catch most of this show, even though I was on the road up until about 10 minutes ago. So we're going to run, Andrew and I are going to run this show down and then also talk to you about this episode of Impact and all anything and anything Impact Wrestling at 515-605-9345. Again, just make sure if you are on hold and you do want to get in the caller queue, you just got to hit that number one after you are put on hold, and that will let us know that you want to get on board in the call line. So, Andrew, let's run down this episode. They open again with a match right out of the gate, an X Division match. They don't go one-on-one, which they rarely do, but Andrew Everett wins a four-way over Caleb Conley, Desmond Xavier, and Matt Sydal. I thought this was a pretty good opener. I mean, again, and this has been something that we've talked about for the last number of weeks, they continue to open the show with matches as opposed to long promos. It differentiates them a little bit from WWE, I think, and they did that again here. And I think especially opening with the X Division, a lot of energy to start the show.
Yeah, I thought it was a good match. I thought it was on the higher end of the four, five, six-man matches they do. It was nice to see Andrew Everett get featured here. I thought they were maybe starting to do away with him, though. So that was encouraging to see. I think, again, I don't know why they put Xavier in the match. Because he looks fantastic, but he has zero wins. And when he first debuted, they said he's one of the future. He's the future of the business, something along those lines. And just to have him go 0-2 now is a bit confusing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was glad that they did something with Andrew Everett here, especially after it looked like they were cooling him off a little bit after some recent weeks where, or back a few weeks ago, about a month ago, where it looked like they were lining him up to go one-on-one with Trevor Lee for the X Division title. Now, look, maybe things change there, once they get someone like Low Ki back in the fold. Maybe when at the beginning of that Andrew Everett push, maybe they didn't know that they were going to have Low Ki under contract at that next television taping. But good to see them do something with him here, I thought, and get a pretty good win. And also, it should be noted at the end of the match, Matt Sydal and Andrew Everett sort of shook hands and came together there as two baby faces at the end of the match, which I thought was good, too, to still sort of keep the spotlight on Sydal a little bit, even though he didn't get the win here.
Yeah, I thought so, too. He's looked impressive, and they had him go over Trevor Lee in just a couple of minutes, so I thought they were going to maybe keep this going for a bit. I'm not saying I'm down on it because they made Everett look more like a contender, so maybe there's more to it. I just thought it was a little surprising that they just had him lose kind of in a just a random four-man match.
After that, they went to some Jeremy Borash sitting behind Josh Matthews and Pope and that whole shtick that they sort of went with last week. Same sort of thing. JB and the fans are on him heckling Josh Matthews. Josh Matthews not happy about that. After that, they had another KM video, if you remember the one last week where he sort of bullied the janitor. This one was a pizza guy. And, they're asking, and same thing with the Rockstar Spud video from last week and the one this week that we'll get to in a minute. They're asking us, I think, to suspend the disbelief a little bit in that it looked like KM was in his apartment. So for some reason, there was a camera in KM's apartment that we don't know. And the same thing with Rockstar Spud. There was a camera, you know, in his bedroom for some reason that's unbeknownst to anyone. But another pretty cool video, I thought. I thought the KM video last week was pretty entertaining, and I thought this one was too. You know, the pizza guy comes in, asks him if he ordered a pizza, or asks him if his name was Billy. He says yes. He gets the pizza in and then tells the pizza guy that he didn't order any pizza when the pizza guy tried to get him to pay the bill. So, you know, so far, I mean, it's only been two. I don't know if this is going to feel stale and old 3-4 weeks in, but two down, I'm pretty entertained by these KM, you know, bully vignettes that they've been doing.
Yes, I am too. It's reminding me of when Ryback suddenly became a bully and then was just like harassing people backstage in WWE, but I like this a lot more. I think KM's good at it. The first few weeks he came in, he wasn't really doing anything for me. He was just very bland. So I like what they're doing now. I mean, it's obviously not main event potential, but I think it's entertaining.
Yeah, I'd agree. And, you know, like you said, at least it's something. He did. He felt a little just sort of there at the beginning and almost seemed like Sienna's lackey a little bit. But this is giving him some character, which I like. After that, they had a promo segment in the ring with EC3. I had a real love-hate relationship with this promo. EC3 came out dressed like James Storm. He mocked James Storm with you know, a little bit of a cowboy or southern accent. James Storm came out to interrupt. They end up in a little bit of a brawl. EC3 takes out the handcuffs James Storm to the ropes, and then just proceeds to beat him with his belt. I mean, I think they Josh Matthews counted over 20. Just really a brutal beating, handcuffed to the rope, just taking whips over the back over and over and over again. What were your thoughts on this E3 promo segment that ended up with James Storm just getting the absolute hell beaten out of him?
Yeah, that was really surprising. The way it started out, I was down on it. I'm not sure if that's where you kind of weren't feeling it.
I was not feeling it at the beginning, and then it turned around at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Just his humor, whatever he was going for, just wasn't quite connecting with me. I mean, I know he's trying to be kind of lame, or, you know, just to get people riled up. It just wasn't clicking. But man, when he started just leveling him with the belt, like, that was violent. That was I was very, I guess, taken in by that and surprised. So, yeah, the way it ended was very strong for me, and the feud is going pretty strong at this point.
Yeah, that's where I was going with it, too. The beginning of it, you know, we've talked in the past about EC3, when he was a heel the last time, being a little too cool, a little too funny, and that's where that sort of started with me. You know, that to me, mocking James Storm, coming out dressed like a cowboy, that's something that a babyface should be doing to a heel. And I know it's not that a traditional babyface shouldn't do that, but 2017, we look at DX mocking the Nation back in the Attitude Era. Or we've seen it in other cases too. I mean, that's something that, I mean, listen to the crowd reaction. Go back, if you have that segment, if they put it on YouTube or if you have it on your DVR, I mean, the crowd was laughing at that segment. They were laughing at James Storm is what was essentially happening. They were entertained by it. And you can't be too entertaining as a heel. And that's a trap that I thought they fell into a little bit the last time when he was a heel. But by the end, I mean, the thing that made me think about at the end when he was just beating James Storm with that strap was how Impact is doing a pretty good job of walking this line. And, you know, they're not ECW in 1997 where they're setting people on fire and just over the top, every match is a weapons match type of thing. But, you know, they're giving you more, I would say, adult-themed storylines and adult-themed action in the ring than you would get with WWE right now. It's more targeted, I think, to that 18 to 34 male demographic with more serious storylines with Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards and the violence that have been, you know, in their storyline and their angle. This one here tonight, it's another example, I think, of Impact doing trying to capture that 18 to 34 male demographic. And I think that, you know, even though it's 20 years later, the serious storyline like this and visuals like what we saw at the end of that promo segment is what's going to rope in some of those younger males that, you know, probably have tuned out of wrestling over the last 10 or so years.
Yes, I completely agree on that. I think that's one of the stronger things Impact is doing right now. They're not doing crazy blood or, like you said, fire, but Like, if you watch Raw and Braun Strowman attacks Roman Reigns, to me, that's more hilarious than something that's going to upset me. You know, him pushing over an ambulance is ridiculous. Whereas
yeah, it was just ridiculous. Like, yeah, it was over the top.
Yeah, exactly. And EC3 pulling out a belt, that just, like, completely got my attention after he hit him, you know, 5, 6, 10 times. And the way he kept going, I'm like, man, like it got me invested. Like, oh, man, just stop. Like, you know, like, how can James Storm take this? So a really strong ending to that segment, and that's something that Impact is doing really well to stand out from their much, much larger competitor.
Exactly. And, you know, that's not something – it's not over-the-top violent, but you know what? That was violent enough that I don't think you would see something like that in WWE. Not in a TV PG era. Not when Daniel Bryan, I mean, this was a while ago now, but not when Daniel Bryan 9 years ago is getting fired for choking someone with his tie. You know, you're not going to see someone take off their belt and whip someone 20 or 25 times in the back in WWE. I just don't think that's something that they're going to let fly. And I'm not saying that's something that necessarily Impact has to do, but I think that's something that's going to attract a younger audience, you know, more, I don't want to say bloodthirsty, but in a sense it is, that UFC audience that just wants a little more action, a little more realism. I think that they're going to gravitate towards something like that. I mean, it reminded me a lot of, if you remember back in the mid-90s, and the thing that I think it would draw the most comparison to is that Kane match between Sandman and Tommy Dreamer in ECW, where Tommy Dreamer was a babyface, but he wasn't really over as a babyface. I mean, the fans didn't really respect him that much. And then he just took a beating from Sandman with that cane to the point where his back was bleeding. And, you know, I remember hear stories of people were sitting in the front row and just begging him to stop and to stop getting up. But Tommy Dreamer kept getting up and kept taking it. It was similar. It was reminiscent to that to me, and it wasn't like James Storm was getting up and going, you know, give me another one. I don't think it was a defining moment for James Storm like it was a defining moment for Tommy Dreamer, but it was just that little bit of, I mean, violence is the only real word, but not over the top. You know, it wasn't hitting somebody with a car and we're going to have this angle of who hit so-and-so with the car. It was something that was believable, very simple. I mean, EC3 just took off his belt. And something that, like you said, by the time you get towards the end of that, I'm sitting there watching that thing going, just stop, just end it. Because, like, Sara's back welting up. It's very rarely in wrestling do you be able to get a visual that sort of goes with the violence because, you know, these guys aren't actually hitting each other. You're not trying to take somebody's head off when you swing a chair, things like that. But, man, I mean, James Storm's back, you could see it welting up. And I think that visual just really added to the whole the violence of the whole angle.
Yeah, it just felt like realistic. It felt chaotic. It didn't feel like something, like you said, planned out where you're going to do this big, massive spot of like the ambulance or whatever. But yeah, it's just very attention grabbing. And it just like the way it started, that's how WWE would run an angle. Somebody comes out, they're goofy. The babyface chases them off, and everybody has a good laugh. But like, it turned it that on its head, and it just you beat the crap out of them. So, a very effective segment, I thought.
Before we get to running down some other portions of the show, we have to hit our first commercial break of the evening. And as we go to our first break, Andrew brings us a trivia question. That trivia question tonight is: what was the name of Magnus's original finishing move? We'll have more on this episode of Impact Wrestling, the answer to that trivia question, and in just a little bit, your calls at 515-605-9345. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch Livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast, 515-605-9345. If you want to talk Impact Wrestling with me, Mike McMahon, and Andrew Socek. Andrew, what was the name of Magnus's first finishing move?
That move was called the Tormentum. He used it when he was Brutus Magnus. It's just kind of a spinning Samoan drop type move. I think he later adopted like a TKO. And now I think he usually relies on that top rope elbow drop.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was going to say, what was his original name? Because I couldn't remember what the name of what name he came in with. I knew it wasn't originally Magnus, and I couldn't recall what it was. That's right, Brutus Magnus. Brutus Magnus, of course.
It's so goofy.
Magnus sounds a lot better. Going with the one name's a lot better. After the EC3 segment, Josh Matthews announced that there will be a tournament to crown GFW Tag Team Champions. I have no idea why. We talked about the titles and the whole GFW branding that's sort of been influx with Impact, especially over this television taping. There was a very GFW-centric show last week and another GFW-centric show this week. We'll see. I mean, the branding, they're definitely cross-branding. I mean, right now, there just seems to be a lot of titles in a company that doesn't have a very big roster. So I think they got to consolidate some of those, and I think they will. But they had up next Laredo Kid and Garza Jr. beating Idris Abraham and Hakeem Zayn to earn a spot in that GFW Tag Team Title Tournament. Andrew, what are your thoughts on them running a tournament for the GFW Tag Team Titles? I mean, I know I said it seems a little weird to me just because why does anyone care about these titles?
Yeah, that may have been the most ridiculous thing on the show to me. A few weeks ago, Karen Jarrett came out and said the GFW and Impact had merged. So if they've merged, well, what's the point of, you know, bringing these titles from the dead? Because I think the Bollywood boys last had them. I doubt they're going to mention that on air. So then it's just like this plot hole of, well, why doesn't somebody have the titles right now? It just makes no sense to me. Yeah, if they're merging, they just don't need to exist at this point.
Yeah, that's sort of where I am too. I mean, I think there is a way, and I heard Wade Keller on, I think it was on the Wade Keller hotline over the weekend, in an Ask the Editor, was asked a question about the GFW titles on Impact. And, you know, I thought he brought up a good point in that if this is the story Jeff Jarrett wants to tell, there's a way to tell that story. And if you want to tell the story of the GFW titles are, you know, within the narrative of your story, you can say that. And you know what? At some point, the viewer just sort of needs to accept it. That's the story we're telling. These titles are important. And my problem with it is that I don't think they've done a very good job explaining that. I don't think they've done a very good job explaining why these titles are important. And they also, like you said, haven't done a very good job of explaining why they're being implemented. Why is there a tournament at all? And like you said, they're not going to mention the Bollywood boys or the champions, I don't think. But there's just no explanation on why there's this tournament happening whatsoever. That's where I think it loses it for some fans that just don't know. Because you know what? Look, I mean, there's, what, 300,000 people roughly watching Impact every week. I'm sure there's a portion of them that are going to know, okay, they people that were the champions are now signed with WWE, and that's why there's this tournament. But there's probably a good portion of the audience that has no idea. And I don't think they've done a very good job explaining what these titles are. They've just sort of thrown them on the show, and here are these GFW champions. You know, I think if you wanted to announce that the companies were merging, what would have made sense to me was you announce the companies are merging. We have these GFW champions because it was a separate company. Now we're going to merge. And I think at the very beginning, you have to lay out, now we have two tag team champions, two world champions, etc. And at Slammiversary, 2.5 months down the road, these titles are going to be unified. And then we know, like when we get to the main event later, which was the GFW title match, we know that Alberto Del Rio winning that match means he's going to Slammiversary. I think that would have made more sense if you just said, okay, we're merging these companies. We have these titles, but we're merging the titles. And that's why they're showing up on the program. Right now, they're just thrown on the show. And no one has really explained why, I don't think, at any given point.
Yeah, completely agree. And then, like, the next-gen title, was on, and that basically disappeared. They haven't said anything that's happened to that. It's just a mess. And we've talked before how there's no real cachet in these titles. There's not like a proud lineage. They finally showed some GFW footage tonight, but it basically just looked exactly like Impact, but with green rope. So I don't think anyone's going to really get invested in needing to see these titles defended, because they don't really have a reason for wanting the GFW title to go on as opposed to, say, the Impact one.
Yeah, and, you know, that's actually a good point. I'm glad you mentioned that, because it was another thing that I had in my notes here. We talked about how Karen Jarrett said GFW and Impact Wrestling are merging. Well, I think it's pretty evident over these first few weeks of Jeff Jarrett being in charge that this rendition of Impact Wrestling is what he envisioned Global Force to be. And the reason I say that is we've seen Impact Wrestling partner up with international promotions, the same thing he was trying to do with Global Force, but everything down to the guys he's brought in, a lot of the new guys on the Impact roster were GFW guys that he had looked at and scouted for that promotion. Right down to the colors. I mean, the new Impact logo, like you said, GFW was using green ropes, but that neon green and blue, the colors of the new Impact logo are almost identical to what GFW was. The primary color might be changed around a little bit, but it seems very, very much to me that this new era of Impact Wrestling is what Jeff Jarrett had planned for Global Force. He was just never able to get it off the ground because he never had television.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, the whole thing behind Global Force was him wanting to run shows basically across the world. He was merging with all these, or working deals with all of these different promotions in different countries. But nothing ever came of it. So I think that's a good point that you said, that this is basically just what GFW was going to be. And so I don't know, that just makes it weird to me, because like it's different than what Impact was, and now Impact has shifted. So there's just like nothing to really get behind for the old Impact fans, because it's not like WCW versus WWF. There wasn't something with a proud lineage and a different look and a different feel. It's just this weird all mesh of a roster fighting with each other over titles that existed on something that most of them never saw.
Yeah, I mean, they've kept some of the same guys. Obviously, Bobby Lashley, EC3. I mean, they didn't rehaul the entire roster. But really, I think that's what it comes down to when you look at the fact that they are, they disbanded Decay. They let Drew Galloway go. They let the Hardys go. They brought in Kongo Kong, GFW guy. They brought in Magnus, GFW guy. Chris Adonis was a GFW guy. Matt Morgan, I don't think was, but a lot of the guys they've brought in were to replace those big stars were those GFW guys. So it sort of seems like this is Jeff Jarrett's opportunity to play out whatever that next vision was that he had. But maybe, and who knows? I'm assuming that when the GFW world or global title and the Impact world title are merged, that it's going to remain the Impact World Championship, because the show is Impact Wrestling. But maybe we'll see it merge and they'll become the GFW World Impact Champion. Who knows? But it seems like that's where this is headed. I just wish they explained it a lot more clearer than they have.
Yeah, for sure. And is Slammiversary in July? Is that right?
Yes, July 2nd.
Oh man, to me it's just like, how are they going to fill two more months of this? So I guess we'll see, but it certainly seems to drag out a lot longer than it needs to be.
Yeah, exactly. After that segment, that match, Laredo Kid and Garza Jr. end up going into the GFW Tag Team Title Tournament. Ava Story faced Laurel Van Ness with Kongo Kong, and Laurel Van Ness won this one. Pretty easily. She continued the attack after the match, and Kong sort of runs in to get her off of Ava Story. Pretty good match. Gets Laurel Van Ness back in the ring. I've been entertained with the crazy scorned bride thing that they've been doing. And I don't know. I mean, it was a short segment, but I liked it.
I liked it. Well, okay. So I liked a bit of it.
I didn't love it. It wasn't like it was the greatest thing on the show, but I thought it was fine. It was fine for what it was.
Yeah, exactly. I guess my first thing that I'm having trouble with is that Impact is having trouble just letting us know who are face and who are heels, because Ava started out as a face. She came back a couple weeks later acting as a heel, and now she's back to being a face. And this happened with LAX, too. They were trying to get cheers from the crowd just like 2-3 weeks ago, and now they're fully heels. So that's just kind of some sloppy booking. Otherwise, Laurel Van Ness is continuing to crack me up, just the fact that she has mascara running down her face, so like somehow water has not touched her face in like 3 months. it just works for me. I can imagine some people not enjoying it, but for some reason it's a complete guilty pleasure at the moment.
They played another Rockstar Spud video. He was in his bedroom. He was again talking about the attack from Swoggle. They didn't show him pouring a bunch of pills in his mouth this time like they did last week. The music was a little more upbeat this time around as well. I thought this was an interesting follow-up to what they did last week. And I don't know exactly where this is going to lead. But I sort of had the same reaction I did last week. If this leads to Spud getting back into the ring in some role, I would be pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, this is probably another guilty pleasure for me. I don't know why it's clicking for me. I think it's just like really well shot for wrestling. You know, to me, House of Horrors looked like complete garbage for the most part, and that's a whole nother can of worms. But this looked like pretty solid television, which is like a big step up from Impact as opposed to the last era. And I don't know, just something about Rockstar Spud, his line deliverings are cracking me up.
From there, LAX had their funeral for Decay, which I thought was an interesting segment. Conan ended up grabbing the microphone and then started to really get on a fan who was waving the American flag at ringside. And just as Conan got out and shoved the fan, the Veterans of War came out from backstage and they brawled with LAX. This was, you know, an interesting segment. It's obviously setting up the Veterans of War to take on LAX. That seems to be the next feud they're going to go into here. I don't know how I feel about the setup, though. I mean, this just felt very much like something Vince McMahon would be all over. You know, the whole patriotic guy waving the flag, and here comes Conan and shoves him down, and here come these guys wearing fatigues, and they're going to defend the guy with the flag. It felt very Lex Express to me.
Yeah, this was really contrived. I liked it at the start when they came out and ran down DK, and I love the fact that they just basically said DK is gone. I've complained a few times about wrestlers not being written out, so I like that aspect. LAX maybe has made some somewhat anti-American statements over the past few weeks. Nothing like standing out to me. So for some guy to just like travel to the arena, bring a giant American flag with him, and they let him into the building with this giant American flag. That didn't work for me at all. I loved the start of it, and the rest was just too 1980s go America stuff for me.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I liked Conan's verbiage in the promo. I liked what he was saying to run the guy down. But like you said, the first thing I thought of was, why did they allow this guy into the building with a... I mean, this wasn't like he was just waving a banner. He was waving a giant American flag on a pole. You know, this wasn't like you brought in a sign. It wasn't poster board size. This was something that you see, you know, them trot out at the 50-yard line for the national anthem before a football game. This is an enormous flag on a pole. It seemed very weird that somebody randomly at ringside would have brought that with them to this show.
Yeah, like the person checking the door is like, oh, let me check your bag quick. Oh, let me check your sign quick. Oh, you have a giant American flag. Yeah, that's cool. Just go right in.
Yeah, no bags are allowed into the building, but giant, enormous, you know, 30-foot wide American flags, no problem there. After a commercial break, Marche Rocket challenged Moose for the Impact Grand Championship. Moose won. Moose ended up winning this match by pin in the second round. Decent match. You know, I'm a fan of Marche Rocket. I think they could do more with him. So I was a little disappointed to see him lose a unanimous decision in the first round and then get pinned in the second round. I mean, for as much as a Grand Championship match can be a squash, this was pretty much it. But the story really came after the match, and that's when Tyrus and Eli Drake attacked Moose from behind. They beat him up. But not only did they beat him up, Chris Adonis came out and applied the Adonis lock after Moose was down. If you remember, they showed an angle from an indie show a couple of weeks ago where Chris Adonis attacked Moose. Then Eli Drake came in with a chair. They had Adonis and Drake had a little bit of a stare down. They beat up Moose some more. And I will give Josh Matthews credit here because I do like that he threw in the line, which, you know, is a cliche line, but he did throw in as Adonis and Eli Drake were staring at each other, and they looked like there was some tension there. Josh Matthews said something to the effect of, "Well, the enemy of my enemy is my friend." And I thought that was just appropriate. I thought that outside of the over-the-top stuff with Jeremy Borash, Josh Matthews was okay on this show. And I'm not saying he was great, but I think that he was okay. And if you were offended by the commentary on the show, and I thought it was okay, I think that goes to show you just how bad it has been in some recent weeks.
Yeah, this week and last week, it was not terrible. Not good. Nowhere near good, but not terrible. Although, with Josh, I don't know whether to applaud him or question his logic when he basically just said, "Why is Marche Rocket in this match?" Because the Pope then said, "Well, he's won a couple matches." And I'm in my mind, I'm like, has he? Like, I can't think of any time Marche Rocket has ever won a match.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm not sure he has.
So that kind of struck out to me. Otherwise,
really sure, yeah.
I thought the match was kind of what it needed to be, because I think Rocket does have talent, but the way he's been positioned, I'm glad he didn't get squashed in 30 seconds, but I'm also glad they didn't do the 9 minutes worth of wrestling. So I think it was probably what it needed to be. And then I'm kind of intrigued with a possible Eli Drake and Chris Adonis, some form of alliance. It shouldn't be an equal alliance since Drake has a lot more potential, but if he kind of joins their group, I think that'd be fine.
Yeah, I agree that from where they are positioned, the result with Moose going over pretty strong makes sense. I just wish they did more with Marche Rocket from the very beginning. But yeah, from positioning from where they are, it certainly makes sense for Adonis for Moose to win this as easily as he did. Let's take another commercial break, and then we'll be back to finish wrapping up the show, and we'll be back with your phone calls at 515-605-9345. Our second trivia question of the night: what was the name of the short-lived Magnus Desmond Wolf tag team? We'll have the answer to that trivia question. Andrew and I will finish giving you our thoughts on this episode of Impact Wrestling, and then we'll take your phone calls at 515-605-9345. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you.
Back here on the PW Torch Livecast, Andrew, what was the name of the short-lived Magnus Desmond Wolf tag team?
They were called London Brawling. They I think they only had a couple of matches total. They were going to have a title match, and then Nigel McGuinness, Desmond Wolfe, I think it was Hepatitis B, although maybe I shouldn't say that because I'm not entirely sure. He had some injury. Okay, good. Well, not good, but he had that.
Not good, but correct.
So he contracted that and then never wrestled for TNA again. He just kind of hit up the indie scene, and then Magnus just kind of went on his own way and eventually became World Heavyweight Champion probably a year or two later.
Yeah, not long after, because I know right around that time, that's when he wasn't wrestling. TNA wouldn't clear him to wrestle, and I think that was right around the time that Ring of Honor was trying to get him out of that TNA deal to be their commentator, I believe. I think in ROH he went color commentator and then matchmaker after that.
That sounds about right, yeah.
And now, of course, he is commentating with WWE and NXT. After that Chris Adonis, Eli Drake beatdown of Moose, Angelina Love. There was a backstage segment before that match. Mackenzie Mitchell was with Dutch Mantel, and he said that next week we will see the return of Ultimate X. It'll be Trevor Lee, Andrew Everett, and Low-Key. I assume for the X Division Championship, because it's an Ultimate X match. A little weird that they didn't announce a fourth guy here, because usually there's at least four guys in these Ultimate X matches, I believe. So we'll see if that leaves something open for either a surprise entrant or maybe Matt Sydal or something like that, because I'd be surprised if they didn't get a fourth person involved in the Ultimate X match. But it does seem like that's going to be, I would assume, the main event of next week's show.
Yeah, I would assume so too. I was on PW Podcast today. I put up for the contributor sent in the X-Pac interviewing Christopher Daniels on his show, and Daniels talked about how they kind of ruined Ultimate X because it was like the coolest thing they'd ever done, but they ran it into the ground, and it is one of the coolest things they've ever done. So I kind of wish they had set this out even further, not just 1 week in advance. I wish they had built it up to Slammiversary, maybe. So, it should be a good match. It's nice to have it back. But, yeah, I really wish they would treat that with a bit more respect, since there's not really any big matches they have that they can promote effectively.
Yeah, exactly. And I think with some of the names they've been able to add to that division lately, Low-Key and Matt Sydal in particular, and with guys like Trevor Lee that they've had for a while and are finally starting to use a little more, or better than they had been, I think that would have been, a good Slammiversary match. But we'll see where they go now, because it'll be interesting, I think, to see who comes out of that with the again, I'm assuming it's for the championship. It's an Ultimate X match. It sort of has to be. But we'll see who comes out with the title next week. I think that could be a good indication also of whether they have long-term plans for Low-Key or whether Low-Key is more like a Josh Barnett, in for one taping sort of signing. We might have a better indication of that after next week. After that backstage segment, Angelina Love wrestled Alicia Edwards. Davey Richards was with his wife, Angelina Love, and Eddie Edwards on crutches was with his wife, Alicia Edwards. And Alicia won this match via DQ after Angelina Love wrapped a chain around her hand and hit Edwards from behind with it. That caused a disqualification. After the match, Eddie Edwards got into the ring gingerly, and he got slapped a couple times, and then ends up taking a crutch to the knee from Davey Richards. He grabbed one of the crutches and then went after Eddie Edwards' knee again, and Davey Richards again, hit Eddie Edwards, I think, a second time with the crutch in the knee, and then Angelina Love and Davey Richards celebrated as they went up the ramp. So another intense angle to this storyline between the Richards and the Edwards. And again, Davey Richards ends up coming on top. It seems like in most of these, they're building this angle really old school with the heat all on the heel and the heel coming on top in most of these interactions. I would assume it's going to lead all the way to Slammiversary, where we finally see Eddie Edwards you know, get some glory in this feud. But I'm okay with building this slowly and letting the heels really get some heat on the baby faces. I think that, you know, it's an old school way of booking, and Kevin Sullivan used to do it a lot in WCW. And I'm a fan of how they're building this, how they're building the story.
Yes. Overall, I like this too. A couple of weeks ago, you mentioned something to the effect of like Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. Like, how do you kind of book these guys in the same segment, because they're going to want to kill each other? So it did seem like a little odd to me that they were both just on the outside of the ring and not like trying to go at it and murder each other with the crutches or anything. The match, I love that they're building up this continued heat. However, I didn't like the Pope's line of the women were rolling around and he's like, oh, this is a cat fight. It's just like,
yeah.
Like, he shouldn't be reducing it to that. Like, that's ECW 1998. That's not 2017, two serious performers wrestling in a heated feud. I don't know. It just kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I'm more of a fan of doing things a little more seriously. And, I almost wish, like you said, that they came up with a reason for why Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards weren't touching each other. You know, come up with a reason why it's not happening. Say that they were told if one of them touched the other, they'd be arrested, or come up with a reason of why they're not killing each other at ringside, because over the last couple of months, every time they've seen each other, they've been trying to kill each other. So why are they out there? It's a good point. Why are they out there tonight and they're sort of civilly standing in the corner? I think there needs to be an explanation for that, or a reason given for that. So yeah, no, I agree with your point. I think they should have made up at least give it, if they're going to be out there, give us a reason for why they're out there and not just trying to murder each other, which is what they've been doing for the last 2 months.
Yeah. Well, overall, I'd still give the segment a hit. Just that kind of looked goofy to me, with Eddie just sitting there or standing there just trying to cheer on his wife. It seemed like I agree with you. There should have been some sort of explanation, but apparently it just didn't cross their mind.
From there, Bobby Lashley was interviewed backstage, and he was asked if he'll be watching the GFW title match, which is coming up next. He said that he's always paying attention to who's coming into Impact and who's going to be new challengers, and he prides himself on holding as many titles as he can, and the GFW title is just the newest one on the block. Interesting that all of a sudden last week, Bobby Lashley was saying that the GFW title shouldn't even guarantee someone a shot at the Impact World title. And here he is a week later talking about how he'd like to collect as many titles as possible, and the GFW title is just the newest one. So a little veering off, I guess, of the narrative there. One week he was saying that he didn't care about it and it shouldn't even earn him a title shot. And the next week he's saying he'd, you know, like to add it maybe to his repertoire. So I thought it was interesting that they were clearly, to me, trying to have Bobby Lashley put some importance on the GFW title, which is just a complete reversal of where they were last week. And with, as we know, with the way they tape, those two promos could have been taped literally within minutes of each other or on the same night. And worst, you know, the longest case scenario, they were back-to-back nights. So it was just interesting to me that sort of the change in narrative from not caring about the title 1 week to now the very next week saying, hey, maybe this is something that I'd like to win. I pride myself on winning titles.
Yeah, that struck me as a bit goofy as well. Like, Bobby doesn't always show up on TV, which I think is fine. But I think when he does, they should make it seem like a bigger deal than what they do. He's not Brock Lesnar level, but they should treat him as if he is the most dominant, scary, dominating force in the company. So when he does show up, they should, I don't know, I just feel like they should mention it beforehand that he's going to be there, as opposed to just showing up in this random 40-second backstage segment, just completely doing a reversal of what he did last week.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm okay with him not being on TV. I agree with you there. That's sort of similar to what, I mean, think back in the 80s, right? Hulk Hogan wasn't on WWF TV every week. Granted, it was a much different time. But he wasn't on TV hardly at all. You know, he barely wrestled on TV. To see the champion wrestle, you either needed to buy the pay-per-view or go to the house shows. Again, it's 30 years ago, so it's a different time now. But I like the fact that they're keeping, I mean, those Bobby Lashley matches, when they happen on television, they're generally for the world title, and they are generally built up at least 1 week in advance. So I'm okay with the way they promote him in the ring. Like you said, I would like it if they built up any of his appearances a little bit more. Even a small interview segment like that, at the very least, mention it early in the show. Later on tonight, we're going to hear from our world champion, as opposed to having it look like it just appeared random that someone caught him backstage. I'd agree there. You know, build up. He's supposed to be the guy you're building your show around. Mention that you've got some words or an interview scheduled with him later on tonight, so at least people know that it's coming and know they can expect it. After that interview, they went right to the main event. It went two segments, and Alberto El Patron captured the GFW title over Magnus. So now El Patron is the GFW champion. Bobby Lashley is the Impact champion. What were your thoughts on this match, and do you think that this does ultimately lead to El Patron versus Lashley at Slammiversary in a couple of weeks, or not a couple of weeks, about a month and a half?
Yeah, I thought it was a good match. I think Impact has done a good job, I think probably the past 4, 5, 6 weeks, of delivering a 15, 20-minute entertaining match. I didn't love it. It didn't quite, hit another gear for me. But I questioned the result a little bit, just because it feels to me, I think to most fans, Magnus is a TNA Impact guy. Like, you know, they're familiar with his work from the past decade. So to have El Patron come in, submit him cleanly, it just kind of further delivers that message of former WWE guys are always better than Impact guys. Now that said, Patron has been doing a good job over the past month. He's revitalized himself. So I'm interested to see where it's going, but yeah, I assume it's just going to be GFW for versus Impact title, and they'll build it up for the next 2 months. So it's far from the worst main event they could deliver. I kind of wish Magnus had won it as a babyface, had they booked it that way over the past few weeks.
Yeah, I agree with you that that's where they're going. But see, and this is where I have a little bit of an issue with the GFW titles being involved, because I don't think that Alberto El Patron versus Bobby Lashley needs the GFW title. I mean, here's a situation where you've got El Patron, who, what was it? Was it his first night in or his second night in? Beat Bobby Lashley for the world title. I mean, there was some antics there, obviously. He ended up relinquishing the title. Bobby Lashley retained it after that. But, it wasn't like... It's not like he needs the GFW title to have a claim for a match against Bobby Lashley. I think he has a claim for a match against Bobby Lashley. So why not just go with that story? And maybe that's what they do, because there's a lot of time between now and July 2nd. I don't know how many episodes of Impact we're going to have. At least four, because they're doing four from India, and they've got at least one more in this set of taping. So there's at least 5 or 6 weeks between now and Slammiversary. Maybe that's the story that they end up trying to tell here, if that's where they go, and it's El Patron versus Lashley, which I think that's the match they're building towards. Maybe that they do sort of veer into more of that story of El Patron saying, hey, I beat you once, I'll beat you again. But the GFW title on El Patron feels more like a prop than anything else. And that's what I really don't think you should have your titles feel like. And that's what it feels like to me. The GFW title on El Patron feels like a prop. And maybe it's just a means to an end. I mean, maybe they're putting it on him because they know they're going with that match at Slammiversary, and they know they want to merge those titles. I mean, I guess if that's what you need to do, that's what you need to do. But it just goes back, I guess, for me, the whole idea of why are these titles involved to begin with. If they did a better job explaining why they were there and what they meant, I'd be more on board with this result actually meaning something.
Yeah, and like the thing is, if they want to do GFW versus Impact, like Patron isn't a GFW guy. He was never at any of those shows, so it's like when the Rock won the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. It's just like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Like if they wanted to do that angle, then Magnus was the guy who was at least the champ. He was at least there. He competed for it. He won that title. So if that's the story they wanted to tell, then go with that. But yeah, I'm with you that it just doesn't, it just does feel like a prop because it just shouldn't exist anymore, really.
Yeah, no, that's a good comparison to me. You know, Rock winning the WCW world title, or even if you want to go, you know, like the Dudleys winning the WCW tag titles, it just, it didn't feel like they needed to be in the company at all, and I sort of get the same vibe here. So that wraps up this edition of Impact Wrestling. We'll get to your phone calls at 515-605-9345 right on the other side of this break. So if you're on hold, we'll get to the phone calls in just about 1 minute here on the PW Torch Livecast. Again, you can reach us at 515-605-9345.
Do you love Pro Wrestling Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more. And Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at RingRustRadio and email us at RingRustRadio@yahoo.com.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show. I am Mike McMahon with Andrew Socek, and we're going to head to the phones at 515-605-9345. Our first caller this week comes from 615-615. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Kenny from Dallas, Tennessee. I'm a VIP member. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you good. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm a first-time caller, but I've been listening to the show. You've done a good job covering Impact, and I just was following it. Of course, I didn't watch it, but I followed it on the internet. And obviously, the things you said earlier about targeting that demographic that the WWE hasn't really been able to grasp, unless they get it, especially with that angle with EC3 and James Storm, as well as just making the physicality of the wrestling itself. And I guess my question to you, going back to the main event, do you feel that El Patron, his style, which I always thought was always kind of an aggressive style in the WWE, do you think he has that same mentality on Impact, or do you see it as a different style from what he was when he was working for the WWE?
I think his style is fairly similar. I'm going to put you on hold just here for 1 second because there's a little bit of static on the line. But Andrew, I mean, I think I sort of see it as being pretty similar. I think in terms of how he is in the ring, do you see any differences in terms of how he wrestled or handled himself from his WWE run to this, what has been a relatively short run so far here with Impact?
I think he's turned up his aggression quite a bit. He just looks happier to be there. He looks like he's excited to be in longer matches because I think when he was leaving WWE, he was doing that League of Nations stuff where he was, you know, in meaningless 4 or 5 minute matches. So his style, his style looks the same to me, but he's taken it up a couple notches in the ring again.
Yeah, and I think part of that comes with some more freedom, of course. He's got a lot more freedom now than he had back in those two WWE runs, I'm sure. I get you back on live now. Like I said, there was a little bit of static in the line, but anything else you want to add tonight?
You're talking a lot about Global Force and all the potential of the merging of the titles, and eventually it's all going to more likely be Global Force and Impact is basically going to be the flagship of the TV show. And I want to run by you this idea. If you know Billy Corgan bought the rights for the NWA name as well as the title, and I know that they had to settle a lawsuit in order for him to kind of leave happily with Impact, I guess you could say. But do you see a possibility, especially when you consider that most of Impact's early history was associated with the National Wrestling Alliance, of a possible working relationship with Impact? Their main goal now is trying to get as much people to work with them as possible to exchange talent and so forth.
Andrew, what do you think of the possibility of maybe the NWA being one of these partners for Impact? I mean, I sort of think, and maybe this is just my read on it, that they're looking more international than domestic. I think the domestic property is going to be themselves, and they're looking to partner up with companies in Japan or Mexico and elsewhere around the world. But what is sort of your read on? Do you think that a potential NWA partnership with Billy Corgan could be in the works?
I think when the new ownership took over at Anthem, there was like a line from the new owner just saying like, oh, you know, maybe we'll discuss that in the future. I think on Billy's end, that's probably not something he'd want to get involved with. Just because, well, one, he might be still bitter, even though Dixie Carter is the one who he had a lot of problems with. However, I just don't think he wants to be close to the Impact brand at all. That's not to say it couldn't happen in maybe a couple of years or something if they were able to work out a relationship. I think to start, he's just going to want to do things his way. He's very into like post-producing videos, like with Decay and the Hardys. I think he's going to want to just throw himself into that world and establish his own identity before really thinking about mixing it up with another company.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we're going to see Billy Corgan do something completely different with the NWA. I think we're going to see him be able to do whatever his unencumbered vision that he wanted to do with Impact, and we started to see it leak in with what they were doing with Decay, and I'm sure he had some influence with the Hardy stuff too. I think it's going to be a lot more stuff like that. And like you said, I don't think that there's necessarily any bad blood between Billy Corgan and Impact Wrestling now. I think the bad blood was between Billy Corgan and Dixie Carter, basically the old people in charge, Dean Broadhead, Dixie Carter, John Gaborik. I think there was a lot of heat and a lot of bad blood between Billy Corgan and those individuals. I don't think there's any bad blood between Billy Corgan and Anthem. They settled their dispute. Both people seem to be fine with the settlement. I think both had commented that they thought it was fair. So I don't think there's any bad blood there, but I just don't know that Impact would be interested in a domestic property to partner with. I think they're trying to look international. And at the same time, like you said, I'm not sure that Impact, as it is currently constituted, is going to be anything close to what Billy Corgan is going to try to do with the NWA. I think he's going to try to do something completely different. And he talked a little bit about that. I mean, I know back probably around November, whatever it was that he left the company, may have been December, he did a pretty long form interview. I think it was with Mike Johnson at PW Insider. It was about an hour long, I think. And he talked about how, he had a vision for something, bringing wrestling into the next generation and really having a vision of doing things completely different outside. I mean, he even went as far as saying, outside of the regular television cable distribution model, which I think is the future anyway, but it seems like he has a different idea on presentation altogether. So, that's what makes the NWA purchase to me a little baffling, because it has so much history and nostalgia to it. Billy Corgan seemed like he wanted to do something completely different, but we'll see. I mean, we don't really know what his plans are for that brand yet. Did we answer all your questions, or do you got anything else for us tonight?
Just one more quick. What is the plan for it's going to run like 2 pay-per-views, Slammiversary and Top of More, and are they going to run in Orlando?
All right, hey, we appreciate the phone call. I'm going to put you back on hold because, like I said, there's some static there in the line. I was having a little trouble hearing that final question. I think it had to do with the number of pay-per-views they ran in a year. Do we see them adding anything else other than Slammiversary and Bound for Glory? And I think the second part of that question was, do we see them going outside of Orlando for some of those events? Andrew, what do you think? Do you think they'll add more pay-per-views here at some point? And do you think they will start to venture maybe outside of the Impact zone for some of these productions?
I think so. If I had to bet, I would probably say Lockdown will be the next one to come back. That seemed to be one of their higher buy rate pay-per-views. I would assume they will also try to get out of the Impact zone during the show tonight. And I think last week they said they're going to be going on summer tours. They didn't elaborate or give any dates at all as to what that one entails. So I would assume they will try to make the pay-per-views leave the Impact Zone as well, which I think is a smart idea if they think they can sell those tickets. But I would guess they'll probably add on maybe two more next year. I think they'll probably take it pretty slow, and it may be sometime before we'd see one every month again.
Yeah, I'd agree. I don't think they'll go to one every month. I mean, technically, they're producing one a month because that's what their contract says they have to do with those one night onlys. I think I've mentioned this in the past, but look, if you have an agreement with your pay-per-view provider where you have to produce X amount of pay-per-views a year, if it's one a month, which it seems like it is, why wouldn't you try to make some of those revolve around your taping schedule? I mean, you're not taping once a month, so maybe you can't do one pay-per-view a month. And I don't think you can go from 2 back to 12 either. But maybe start with one a quarter. You know, maybe in 2018 they could do one a quarter, and then after that in 2019 you could do every other month, and then maybe in 2020 you could get people back to once a month. But I think it would have to change drastically. I think they would have to change the price point, because now with the WWE Network, people are conditioned to paying $9.99 for a pay-per-view. I don't think you're going to get people to jump back into $50 or $55 for an HD feed of a pay-per-view. I just don't think it's going to happen. And that's why I think some of those one-night onlys at $15 make sense. But to me, or $19.99 maybe it is. I think it's $14.99. Maybe it's $19.99. But if you're producing you're producing that content anyway. If you can line it up with a television taping and tape Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, let's say, why not produce some of those live? It's not like you're not producing the content. It would require you to do it in Orlando, but why not try to produce some of those live and then maybe go from, who knows, 500 to 1,000 buys on a one-night only? Who knows how many people actually buy those one-night only? I can't imagine it's a lot. But maybe you could do... And this still is a bad number, but maybe you could do 20 or 25,000 buys if you've got people up to doing something live. And, it's one of those things where, to me, like I said, you're taping the content anyway. So whether you're taping matches that you're throwing in the ring with no storyline to them, or whether you're producing a show live that has some storyline to it, you're there, you're taping matches regardless. Why not try to get the most out of that time? I think producing something more live that's more storyline driven would produce more money there. Like you said too, I think getting out of the Impact Zone would be smart to do when they can do it. If you can get to a point where you are selling tickets that can offset some of your production cost, right now they're not selling any tickets. So if you can get to a point, I mean, even if they're drawing the same crowd, look at Ring of Honor. I mean, Ring of Honor tapes their TV. They're not running buildings that have more than 1,000 people or 1,500 people, but they're selling tickets and they're offsetting that cost, the production cost, at the bare minimum. I know I went to a Ring of Honor show. They're going to be back up in my area in Lowell, Massachusetts in a couple of months, I think in June. They're running a pay-per-view and a television taping. The building doesn't seat more than 2,000 people at the most. And they were back in here in September, and they probably drew 1,500 maybe. But I have a hard time, if Ring of Honor can draw 1,500 people, in certain markets, I think Impact could draw 500 to 1,000 in certain markets. You're not going to be able to do it everywhere, but in certain markets, I think they'd be able to do that. And I think we've talked about this before, too, but they must have data on where large segments of people are watching their show. What parts of the country are you getting the most viewers? And I think you got to be strategic and put some of those shows there and see how they draw. That would be the way I would do it anyway. And I think some different ambience, some different settings other than the Impact Zone is good. It's good for the show to change it up, get it in front of a different audience, get the building to look a little different. That's why, to be honest with you, I'm really looking forward to these shows that they're going to tape in India. Because that's going to look those shows should look much different than what we've seen taped in Orlando. And you got to remember too, they've been in Orlando 100% for the last year and a half.
Oh yeah, I thought it was even farther. But I can't even remember the last time.
Maybe
the last. I wanted to say 2000. 2015 was the last time they went to New York or something.
They were in New York there for a while, yeah. Those are Destination America shows. I want to say the first taping for Pop was at like a casino in Pennsylvania. But the room looked like the Impact Zone. It was like a ballroom, basically. And I think they may have done that for like two or three episodes or four episodes. But even then, that would have been January of 2016. So that's a year and a half ago. So by the time these India shows air, you're going to be at a solid 18 months since you've had a show in any other place other than the Impact Zone in Orlando.
That's crazy. I'm impressed that the crowd is as excited as they are still, kind of during the last year, it was really rough. Some episodes of Impact, they were not having it at all, like to the point where you'd feel bad for the wrestlers competing because nobody was reacting in any way. That seems to be a big improvement lately. And like you, I'm very curious to see how these India shows do. If nothing else, it's going to look good visually for them. It's going to make them feel like a bigger company. And like Josh Matthews says, it's the first time that a company, wrestling promotion from America, has aired shows over there. So that is probably a pretty impressive thing on their end.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think the new setting should be good. All right, we're going to take another break and then come back and wrap up the show. I actually got to get out of here in just a couple of minutes. So we're going to throw to our last break of the show. Andrew and I will be wrapping up with our final thoughts in just a couple of minutes. But before we do, here's a little bit about PW Torch VIP.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
All right, back here in the PW Torch livecast, wrapping up this week's episode of the Impact Post Show. Andrew, anything else you want to add before we get out of here for this week?
No, I guess I'll just briefly plug PW Podcast again. I'll probably be doing that for a bit. at PW Podcast, we have in-depth recaps of the biggest wrestling podcasts out there. I just looked at my emails, and it looks like Chris Gasper, he's doing a good job doing the Xbox 1-2-360 recaps. He just sent in a Steve Austin Unleashed one. So that's, I believe, the first time we've had Steve Austin Unleashed on the site, and that's the biggest one we haven't been covering yet. Ryback is about to receive coverage. Otherwise, Bruce Pritchard, Something to Wrestle With. There's a really good in-depth report on Judgment Day 2002 that you'll learn a lot. Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, so many ones out there. If you don't have time to listen to an entire, hour to 3 hour podcast, come to pwpodcast.com and just check out some recaps. And if you want to listen to a certain segment of the show, we have timestamps up. So check it out every day. We got tons of stuff coming in.
And I've said this before, I use the site on a daily basis, because if you were to listen to every podcast out there, it would be a 60-hour a week job, and I just don't have time to listen to everything. So it's a great tool to like you said, seek out what you want to listen to, get recaps of everything, but then if there's something you do want to listen to, it's pretty easy to seek it out and make sure you get the stuff you want to get to. Tomorrow, here on the PW Torch Livecast, Bruce Mitchell and Rich Van will be live with the primetime edition of the show. Wade Keller is here Monday and Tuesday nights after Raw and SmackDown go off the air. Wednesday is the midweek flagship in the afternoon. And then Thursday is Interview Thursday. Wade has Sean Waltman and Todd Martin on the show earlier today. And then it's Andrew and I back here on Thursday nights at 10 o'clock on the PW Torch Livecast. So that will do it for this week. Thank you guys for calling in. Thank you for listening. And Andrew and I will be back next week as soon as Impact goes off the air, right here on the PW Torch Livecast.